I don't know if you know, finding out that your entire life was based on a fraud rocked anyone else's marriage, but it's kind of tough for me and Tracy there for a while. You know, all kinds of things start to run through your head, you know, especially if you've gotten married young and you're sort of looking at each other and you met each other through this thing. And I always sort of think of it as like if you've met at the Klan, you know, the Ku Klux Klan picnic, and what really attracted you to each other was that you both hated Mexicans or something more than anybody else. And then, you know, one day you sort of wake up and you're like, we shouldn't be hating Mexicans. And, you know, we've built our whole life on this whole Mexican thing, but they're just like us. Now, you know, now what? You know, or I shouldn't have even been at the Klan picnic. Now it's so, like, and, you know. You know, maybe a slight exaggeration, but so anyway, I don't know, in a way, like, you sort of hang around on those bulletin boards for a while, you start to see people come on who just, like, discovered things, and they're in crisis, and they don't know what to make of anything, and it's funny, it's like in those first moments, it's like your whole world, and that includes your marriage, sort of dissolves and has to be reconstituted, and you sort of have to, no matter how strong or solid you were, you sort of have to, like, get to know this brand new person, and they're not the same person that they were, and, you know, when you married them. I, for example, I had tried to become Ezra Taft Benson. I know it's hard to believe because I had a hit record, but, you know, and all of a sudden I wasn't President Benson anymore. And so anyway, long story short is Tracy and I wound up at sort of a Learn How to Communicate Better seminar for couples on one occasion. And sort of shortly after this happened, and you know, there were couples there that were really in crisis and really trying to learn how to communicate. And there was one couple in particular that the lady kept volunteering them to be the show couple. So every time the moderators, whatever the whatever they're called, facilitators or something, the teachers would. At this, it was probably like more egalitarian than teacher. It was, you know, I don't know, I can't remember. It was kind of a, you know, hippy dippy Simpsons thing or something. But anyway, I'm getting off track. But anyway, it's like, do we have any volunteers? She would be like, you know, me and Rick, you know. So this you know, Rick guy would come up, and he was a cop, and yeah, he was kind of a tough guy, and, you know, not really a, you know, like in touch with his feelings kind of guy or whatever. And we watched this couple go through these every time they'd introduce a new exercise, she'd volunteer them, and they'd go through these things. And I'll tell you, it was excruciating because they just couldn't seem to get anywhere. And she kept bursting into tears, and he seemed flummoxed. And, you know, and it was very like, we're not going to argue. We're going to take turns sharing. And, you know, this is like the moderator guy. And so, look, Susan, you're going to share your feelings. And Rick, you're just going to mimic back to her. You're going to mirror her. You're going to come across the bridge into her world. And then you're going to have your chance to speak at the end of it. But right now, Rick, whatever she says, you just repeat back to her. And you're going to make her feel safe. You know, let's go. So Susan was like, you know, immediately burst into tears. I was really upset about what happened before we left. And like almost on cue, this Rick guy looked at the moderator and said, "She has no right to say something like that." And went on like that, you know, and you know, the moderator was like, "You know, Rick, stop, you know, stop." And then she's crying harder. It was terrible. But anyway, in the middle of this thing, I wrote on a little notebook, you know, to Tracy, "These two are goners." You know, great attitude. But anyway, this is a true story. By the end of this weekend, they were like hugging and kissing. And they'd actually had this big breakthrough. After, of course, all of us had learned way more about them than, you know, we ever wanted to. Well, anyway, so this first song I'm going to play, I hope somebody can hear the guitar. Here, play my guitar out like that.
If not, we've got a great sounding guitar on the recording on the website.
Okay, great. It's sort of about like... it's probably something most of the guys can relate to, like the doofus guy who's begging the girl for forgiveness and stuff like that. And you know, they're trying to come together again. And I wrote it with a fella in Los Angeles a couple of years ago. And it's called Aeroplane. We had to use Aeroplane because it has the extra syllable. And, you know, British people call airplanes Aeroplane. But anyway, so this is Aeroplane. Thank you.
I've been battling a sinus infection. I kind of lost my top end. Yeah, so I was actually thinking of canceling. I just might end up accidentally yodeling more than usual. Anyway. This is another song I wrote. I wrote sort of like very shortly after we sort of discovered things were going on with the church, and I remember, like I said this morning in my talk, like I didn't mention anything to Tracy when I was sort of going through this two-year ordeal, because I kept thinking that, you know, everything would turn out all right and I would sort of find this great, incredible thing on the farm's website that would make like all 800 problems go away. So then when I sort of told Tracy what was going on, it was like a, you know, bomb had gone off. And I remember sort of in those first few months, like I starting to like watch her and pay attention more than I'd ever, because I sort of felt like there was this, you know, all of a sudden this sort of strange, gap between us, and, you know, not knowing, you know, what was going on anymore, and she felt disoriented and everything, and I just kept thinking, like, you know, I gotta read this woman's mind, I gotta keep things together, and I gotta achieve, like, the final thing, like, the guy goal of all time, like, understand your wife. So I wrote this next song. It was sort of like a little love song, and, you know, it was sort of inspired by that mindset. It's called What You Won't Reveal. Could you hear my guitar back there? Okay. Okay, this is it.
Thank you.
Next one is, you know, like, it's come up a few times today, and I, you know, there's this funny thing, like, you know, not to talk about the church again, I can't get it out of my, all Mormonized, my brain, all the neural pathways are, I'm going to do Book of Mormon stories right now. I wonder how long till that one gets deleted from the primary songbook. Right. Yeah, well, you know, with the exploding popularity of the limited intelligence, I mean, geography theory. Right, so. Anyway, can't shut up about it. Well, like, one of the things that happens is, like, you know, you sort of go from, like, thinking you know everything of importance in the entire universe to thinking you know nothing. You know, and you know, there's this other funny thing is, like, even once you sort of realize that you've been had, and you know, really what it comes down to is Joseph didn't tell the truth about his experiences, but I mean, there's this huge superstructure built on top of this thing, so it sort of becomes your whole world. It's difficult, you know, I think for a lot of people to sort of give up the idea, because we've kind of conditioned ourselves and been so conditioned by others to think of anything other than sort of bleak misery or like purposelessness outside of the thing, outside of the organization or the church or the cult, whatever you want to call it. And of course, joy existed before Joseph Smith, you know, told his stories, and love did, and faith in something beyond ourselves did. Some people seem to like become devout atheists. Every once in a while you meet a devout evangelical Christian. And I guess I'm sort of somewhere in the middle, and I haven't really been able to sort of shake a sense of wonder about what might be out there. And I don't really know. I mean, everybody's like, so where are you now? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know anything. That's where I am right now. Thanks. But I don't know, like, there's this sense, and I read this book on Einstein not long ago, Einstein and Religion, and like so much of what he said I sort of related to, because he kept talking about this sort of sense that of sort of cosmic awe, and there was something out there, and who made us, and where did we come from, those kinds of things. So this next song was sort of inspired by all of that sort of sense of wondering awe. That's an M reference. Sorry, there I go again. But anyway, this one's called Silence Speaks Your Name. I'm gonna see if I can remember all the lyrics.
Gave us time. wants to speak what David has to say. Gave us all emotions, gave us minds, wills possessed, but we couldn't say tonight.
Came out. My only album. It's kind of a long story, but record company's not doing that great these days. In fact, it's nice to actually play in front of this many people. the demand for listening to me play has been, well, I mean, maybe it'll start increasing here at the Exmo conferences. I don't know, but anyway, my record came out and. The record company president thought he had a great idea. He kept what he thought was the big hit off the album for the second single, and he thought this sort of, you know, cute little ditty that he liked on the album should come out first, and it's what they call a setup track. So it's just enough to sort of give a little, you know, make a little splash, get your name on the radar screen, and then they come with guns blazing with the big tune that has legs. Well, so they put the first single out, and I was still at home up in Canada or whatever, and you know, not really exactly knowing what's going on, because, I mean, I was on the other side of the continent, and all these guys are in New York, whatever. Well, I started to get a couple of phone calls that this first single was really starting to react or do well at radio. So that was very exciting, and, yeah, I didn't really have, though, you know, sort of a palpable sense of what that meant or how much it was sort of getting through until we went on a little trip, being the fellas that were playing with me at the time. We flew to Boston. So we all piled out of the airport and got our stuff and piled into a taxi cab, which, like many of the cabs at the airports, was driven by a fellow who appeared to be a very recent immigrant, very sort of poor English and whatever. And, you know, there's a couple of outrageous-looking characters in the band, you know, not Ezra Taft Benson wannabes. So I got into the back, and I remember Ryan, the guitar player, piled into the front with this guy. And, well, you know, there's a couple of guitars that he'd thrown in the trunk, so he started to say... a very thick accent. So, what are you? Who are you? And Ryan said, "Well, we're, you know, we're in a rock band and we play music. And what songs are you playing?" And, well, you know, Tal back there wrote some songs and we just put an album out. Well, what are the songs that you are playing? And he said, "Well, you know, you probably haven't heard of it, but we had this first single called, you know, it's called She's So High. It just came out to radio." And there's like dead silence for like, you know, a second or two. So I, you know, I'd sort of been like, so I kind of looked up and I looked in the rearview mirror and the guy's eyes were like wide as saucers.
And you know, and then I heard this, like all the way to the hotel.
Oh my goodness gracious. I cannot believe that in my very own taxi cab is the man who is singing the song that I'm hearing all the time on the radio. At nighttime, I'm going to sleep and I'm hearing that song in my head. I'm saying, who is singing that song? It is the very man in my own taxi cab. And I was like, I thought, this is great. The guy's been in the country for like 3 weeks and he knows who I am. So anyway, so this is She's So Hot.
She's touch, smell, sight, taste, and sound. But somehow I can't believe that anything should happen. I know where I belong, and nothing's gonna happen again. She's so high.
Thanks a lot.